Hello, scumbags and scumbagettes. Welcome back to the Scumbag Diaries. I'm your host, Christopher Maggard, and today we're going to talk a little bit more about magic. Last week we talked about my experience with magic, what I thought it was, and you know why I believe in it, at least why I believe in it the way I do. Today we're going to focus more on other people's beliefs in magic, the way that magical figures have affected society, the way that magic itself permeates throughout society in many ways that most people wouldn't realize unless they'd be pointed out. But first things first on this episode, I would like to celebrate the magic of friendship. Bronies, keep your dick in your pants. We're not talking about My Little Pony. What we're talking about is I have a dear friend named Zachary Clark. One of the best things to happen during quarantine, and one of the silver linings, is that the isolation everyone felt, it sort of brought everyone back together, and it brought people closer in the sense that in our isolation and stuff, we sort of like reached out, right? And now Zach is a person who I met in 7th or 8th grade, and we became fast friends over our love of Tenacious D and Causing Mischief. He taught me how to play guitar. He taught me the only song I actually know how to play on guitar, which is What I Like About You. He taught me how to stand up for myself, how to basically not give a fuck what anyone thought about me, to put my best foot forward and just be myself. And recently, we have been communicating again because Facebook is dope and you can, like, talk to motherfuckers. And it's the kind of friendship where, like, whether we haven't spoken to each other in a month or damn near a decade, the conversation picks up right where it left off, and that's really wonderful. The reason I'm bringing up on the podcast today, though, is he was gracious enough to take time and energy out of his life to design a t-shirt for the podcast. He's also designed a bunch of other badass shirts for a clothing line that he is going to be dropping soon. And as soon as that happens, I will give it to you guys, and you should go and buy some of this man's shit, because he is incredibly talented. And his work speaks for itself, honestly. And once you see it, you're going to be fucking typing that debit card information up in that motherfucker, because it's going to be fantastic. Now, I'd like to dedicate this episode to him and his family and his success moving forward. And if any of the like-minded magical practicing listeners out there would like to take a little nugget of their own energy and time or will and sort of toss it my boy Zach's way, like some kind of fucking spirit bomb of success, that would be greatly appreciated, man. Thank you very much for the support and the nudges to move forward with this shit, because I really, like, honestly, I started to feel sort of down about the podcast and like I wasn't really doing that great. And with all the recent support I've got after this last episode, it's really making me want to push forward and fucking kick life's ass, so I appreciate that. But enough of talking about how my friend Zach has a giant cock. Let's talk about magic. How we're going to start off the magic conversation today is actually by sort of blending the two worlds of the Scumbag Diaries together, nerddom with the occult. Right now on Disney Plus, there's a television series called WandaVision, and the star of that show is Wanda Maximoff, aka the Scarlet Witch. Now, it's just a damn good show, and spoiler alerts, because I'm probably going to spoil some shit. So, anyone who's familiar with Marvel movies knows that in 2008, the Iron Man film came out under Marvel Studios, which was like a last-ditch effort to sort of save Marvel from bankruptcy. Shortly after that, Disney bought Marvel Studios, and eventually the company that made the comics and shit itself just owns Marvel now. Now, from that initial Iron Man film, we got a 23-film story arc that fleshed out nicely, and there have been comic adaptations in the world of film and television before, but until Marvel started the MCU, they always left something on the table that fans wanted. Now, Marvel beautifully spread out a story over the course of 23 movies over 10 years. And they put in so much fan service that any plot holes or deviation from source material would be overlooked. But honestly, the MCU films didn't deviate from the source material all that much, and they pulled some fucking deep cuts as far as references are involved. But after the success of Endgame, which was the... Well, actually, technically, Spider-Man Far From Home is the last in the initial story arc. But after Endgame, I thought that there was no way they could top that. There was no way they could make things more interesting. But around the time that came out, they acquired Fox, which meant that they could now use all of the X-Men characters, and they could use the term mutants. Now, they have used Wanda Maximoff and Pietro Maximoff in the MCU. Elizabeth Olsen plays Wanda Maximoff. In the Fox franchise, Pietro Maximoff goes by Peter Maximoff and is Quicksilver, played by Evan Peters. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he is played by Aaron Taylor Johnson. Both of those actors are from the film Kick-Ass. Aaron Taylor Johnson plays the titular character, Kick-Ass, and Evan Peters plays his friend slash eventual sidekick enemy in the sequel, but it's not Evan Peters, it's another guy. I die fucking gress. So, Wanda Maximoff is, in the comic, her origin story is that she's a mutant, but then she's not a mutant. She was given her powers by the High Authority or some shit. I'm kind of blanking on the name or whatever. But in the movies, Wanda gets her powers from an Infinity Stone. And she has not been called the Scarlet Witch yet in the movies or the Marvel Cinematic Universe where her TV show takes place. But in this television show, WandaVision, they explore facets of reality, the fabric of reality, how things can exist, be created, destroyed, changed. And Wanda uses her chaos magic, that's what they call it in the comic books, to manipulate reality into what she wants, because, you know, Vision, her husband, was killed in Infinity War, and so on and so forth. But it's recently been revealed that the neighbor Agnes was actually all along Agatha Harkness, a witch who in the comics was the nanny to Franklin Richards, Reed Richards' son, who is an Omega-level mutant that can create pocket dimensions and is basically super fucking strong. But I digress. And she also was Scarlet Witch's mentor and took care of Tommy and Billy when they were children, before they were absorbed into Mephisto, and then later their souls were reincarnated into two human babies, and they weren't actually biological twins, but their souls were twins, so they were still technically twins. And then Wiccan and Speed were in the main canon of the universe. And in this WandaVision show, they pulled Evan Peters' Quicksilver from the Fox universe and thrust him into the MCU universe, and he replaced Aaron Taylor Johnson's. For now, it appears he's being controlled by Agatha Harkness. But they have recently gone down into the basement of Agatha's house where the Nexus of Reality is, and the Nexus of Reality could potentially connect all of the multiverse from both the Fox movies, because they did timeline switching there, and the MCU movies, because they did a lot of timeline switching there. Time travel's a big facet of this, and time travel is basically magic as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, they swapped out who Quicksilver was, and now it's come to light that Agnes is actually Agatha Harkness. Blah, 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 blah. Shit's gonna hit the fan. Doctor Strange is gonna show up. Magic, magic, magic. Now, why did I tell that incredibly long-winded story of magic and time travel and this and that next to reality? It's confusing. I'm sure you couldn't follow it. The reason I told you that up front is because that's basically going to be the flavor of the episode. I'm going to talk about a lot of crazy shit relatively quickly, and it's still probably going to be the longest solo episode of the Scumbag Diaries ever. So, smoke them if you got them. Whether that's a blunt if you live in a legal state, or if you live in an illegal state like I do, you can partake in Delta 8 THC, which is 66% as psychoactive as the illegal Delta 9 THC. However, it is derived from the hemp plant and is federally legal in all 50 states. Warning though, kids, if you do imbibe in Delta 8 THC, however, it will show up on a drug test as THC metabolite, which could cause you to fail, so make sure you weigh the risks of failing the drug test or clear the smoking of Delta 8 with your employer beforehand. Now, let's abandon comic books for the moment, because we will be coming back. I didn't really have anything to connect WandaVision to this other than the fact that trying to explain it would be confusing, because magic isn't simply a A to B to Z story. It spans the course of thousands, if not millions of years, across multiple cultures, and I can only talk about the cultures and the stories and the themes that we have recorded, which only goes back a couple of thousand years. So it's going to be a mess of an episode, but it's going to have some interesting stuff in here, and if you guys can bear with me until the end, I think you will learn a lot, and I promise next week we'll lay off of magic and we'll talk some more about some nerdy shit. And soon I will be putting up the first episode of my movie podcast, Real Talk 420. I hope you guys enjoy that as well. So before we get into talking about magic, as far as magic is concerned, first let's talk about what the word occult means. Now, the definition of the word occult differs from what I think of it as. The definition of the word occult is a supernatural, mystical, or magic belief, practices, or phenomena. Now, the Latin origin of the word occult means to hide or to obscure. So when I talk about occulted knowledge, occult knowledge, esoteric knowledge, something like that, the point that I'm trying to get across is that it is knowledge that is hidden. Now, technically, anything that I speak about in this podcast, as far as the occult goes, has been unearthed and is no longer occulted or hidden, but I use the term and I feel as though it is acceptable, because it's not something that you're going to have thrown directly into your face if you just went through life on the normal track of society. Like, what I mean by that is, if you were to wake up the first day on Earth and then live your life without any outside influence other than like mainstream societal views and values, you will undoubtedly come into contact with Christianity, Judaism, possibly Buddhism, and atheism. But all of the overlapping facets of those religions and theologies aren't going to be apparent to you or shown to you, because the truth is hidden or occulted behind the surface of all of those religions. So we'll just keep that in mind moving forward. And honestly, folks, I think it's about time we got this fucking crystal ball rolling, don't you? First, let's discuss a character from the collective history of the world and the collective occulted mythos of the world, and that is a man whose birthday is December 25th. His birth is quite exceptional, because you see, he was born of a virgin named Mary. His birth was accompanied by a great star in the east, and upon his birth, he was adored by three kings, or magi. At the mere age of 12, he was a prodigal child teacher. At the age of 30, he was baptized and began his ministry. This man had 12 disciples who traveled with him, and when they traveled, he would perform miracles such as healing or turning water into wine. He was known by other names such as the Lamb of God, the Light, the Son of God, the Good Shepherd, the Truth, the Way. After being betrayed by one of his followers, this man was crucified, and he was buried for 3 days before he was resurrected. And I know what you guys are thinking, Chris, it's obvious who you're talking about. We've heard the story time and time again. And that's fair enough. I'll give you guys that. I am, in fact, talking about the Egyptian sun god Horus, who would battle his nemesis, the representative of the darkness, Set. And every morning, Horus would conquer over Set. And every evening, Set would return and conquer over Horus. These figures represent day and night. Horus representing the sun, who has been represented as an emissary of God who provides healing light to the people of Earth throughout history from the earliest recorded civilizations. Such as with the Greek Attis, who was born of a virgin on December 25th, crucified, dead for 3 days, then resurrected. Or perhaps in India, Krishna, who was born of a virgin, a star in the east marked their birth, they performed miracles, and upon their death, they were resurrected. Of course, the Greek Dionysus, who was born of a virgin on December 25th, performed miracles such as walking on water and turning water into wine, and was known as the King of Kings, God's only begotten son, and
the Alpha and Omega.
And all the way over in Persia, we have Mithra, who was born of a virgin, born on December 25th, had 12 disciples, performed miracles, was crucified, died for 3 days, and then resurrected. He was also referred to as the Truth, the Light, and many other names that the previous mentioned deities were also referred to. Also, the sacred day of worship of Mithra is Sunday. Various other religious figures such as Krishna of Hindustan, Buddha Saika of India, Salahavana of Bermuda, Zulis or Zul, and Osiris of Egypt, Odin for the Norse mythology, Zoroaster and Mithra, we talked about that, Baal even technically fucking falls up under the same sun representative story, but I think that the most famous person who shares the same story as all of these figures is a Jesus Christ of modern day Christianity. But the real question is, why do all of these figures throughout mythology share the same details? Why born on December 25th? Why of a virgin? Why the 3 days of crucifixion and resurrection? What's up with that? Well, that could be represented easily by the stars. So first, let's address the star in the east that marked the birth of all these figures. The star in the east, represented in all of these stories, is Sirius, which is what my favorite Harry Potter character is named after, Sirius Black. Now, on December 24th, the star Sirius aligns with Orion's belt. Another name for the three bright stars on Orion's belt is something they've been known as for thousands of years, the Three Kings. Now, the Three Kings and Sirius all align and point to the place of the sunrise on December 25th. The virgin birth in all of these stories refers to the constellation Virgo, or the Virgin. Virgo is also referred to as the House of Bread. The personification of the constellation Virgo is a virgin holding a sheaf of wheat. Bethlehem, the place of Jesus' birth, also coincidentally translates to House of Bread. Now, as we pass from the summer solstice into the winter solstice, the days become shorter and colder. From the perspective of the northern hemisphere, the sun appears to be moving south and getting smaller and farther away. The shortening of the days and the withering of crops symbolizes death as we approach the winter solstice. On December 22nd, the sun, looking like it's moving further away and gotten smaller, goes to its lowest point in the sky, which just so happens to hang around the constellation of the Southern Crux, or the Southern Cross. Once the sun stops moving at the Southern Crux, it appears to be stationary, in place, hanging on the Southern Cross, for 3 days. And then, on December 25th, after 3 days of hanging on that cross, the sun moves 1 degree to the north, representing rebirth and the fact that the frigid winter is over and soon people will have a bountiful harvest. And so, astrologically, as told in all of these stories throughout recorded history, the sun dies for 3 days, hangs on the cross, and is then resurrected. However, we do not celebrate the return of the sun until Easter during the spring equinox, because that is a point in which the sun overpowers darkness and the days reach their longest and warmest. Now, the 12 disciples that many of these sun god figures share could be representative of the 12 astrological constellations which the sun or Jesus or Mithra or whichever deity you're using to represent the sun travels around with. Now, the constellations and the sun are going to come more into play in a few moments, and this is when things get kind of confusing if they haven't already become confusing, so I apologize. So the Christian crucifix represents lots of things. The cross represents the intersection of male energy and female energy, but more importantly, the original sign of the crucifix was actually an astrological cross, and as time went on, the pagans adopted the symbology. That's why in Celtic art and early Catholic Christianity, and sometimes today in Catholicism, you'll see a cross with the circle behind it. That is actually the simplest representation of the cross of the zodiac. This symbol of the cross with the circle is actually the reason the Zodiac Killer calls himself the Zodiac Killer. A lot of people don't put those connections together. The symbol that he put in all of his letters isn't any form of a Christian symbol to him. It is literally the shorthand for the cross of the Zodiac. I'm not the Zodiac Killer, also. I don't know if that's actually, like, public. No, I'm not the Zodiac. If people didn't notice that and didn't put two and two together there, it's not because I'm the Zodiac, because I'm only 28, so I'm not a serial killer. Name the Zodiac anyway. All right, so here's when astrology and Christianity and all the other theology and religious shit sort of start to blend in together. And that's when we talk about, at least from a biblical standpoint, they talk about ages, right? For instance, Matthew 28:20 says, "I am with you always to the very end of the age." Matthew 20:13 says, "Either in this age or the age to come." Matthew 13:39 says, "The harvest is the end of the age." Now, what does age mean? It's obviously the passage of time, but how much time? Let's find out together. I already know, but I'm going to be telling you. So let's you find out. So an age, as far as the Bible and Christianity and other religions are concerned, or as far as astrologists are concerned, are represented by the precession of the equinoxes. I apologize. I don't take notes before the podcast. I just rely on my ADHD and my memory to fucking swim me through whatever topic we're talking about. What that passage of time marks, however, is every 2150 years, the sun would rise in the morning under a different sign of the zodiac. Now keep in mind, all of this information that I'm giving you is information predating ancient Egypt. So when people talk about how, like, astrology and stuff is a new pseudoscience that's been around, that's fucking bullshit. Astrology is the basis of essentially every single branch of science we have today. Without astrology and astronomy, we wouldn't have gotten to fucking quantum physics. And that's just a linear timeline, stare back down the lens of history fact that no one's going to tell you, because, you know, the general consensus is astrology is a pseudoscience and doesn't have any actual meaning or tethering to the world. One of the main arguments you hear is that the gravitational pull of the doctor pulling you from your mother's womb has more effect on you than the gravitational pull of the moon, which is cool and everything, but that doesn't make a lot of sense when the moon literally controls the fucking tides of the ocean and water, and we're made up of, you know, mostly water. But I digress. Astrology is something we're going to delve into deeper. Believe it or not, right now, talking about the ages and the passing of the zodiac and everything, we're not even talking about astrology right now. I haven't even named the thing we're discussing yet. I'm just slathering down layers of information to sort of give you the puzzle pieces to put together. So, from 4300 BC to 2150 BC was the age of Taurus. So, the energy of the universe was ruled by the bull, which is why this time period, the sun god that everyone is referring to and everything is representative of Mithra, right? That's why Mithra fights the bull, and he's the representative of the sun. Now, from 2150 BC to 1 AD was the age of Aries, which is ruled by the ram. This is the representative of the sun at this point in time is Moses. That's why whenever he comes down off of Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments and he sees his followers worshiping a golden calf, he throws down the tablets and tells them all to kill each other, is because he understands that the age of Taurus, which is representative of the cow and the calf, has since passed. They are now in the age of Aries, or the ram, right? Now that brings us to the age that we're in currently, the age of Pisces, which spans from 1 AD all the way into the future of 2150 AD. Now, the solar messiah for this age is Jesus. Now, we are in the age of Pisces, which is why Jesus is represented of fish. All the Christians who have the little Jesus fish on the back of their thing, they don't understand that that's coming from the zodiac. That is an astrological concept. The age of Pisces is the age of Christ, right? Now, this next age is something, if you haven't heard any of the shit that I've talked about so far in the podcast, you've definitely heard of this next age, especially if you collect crystals and you're into some hippy-dippy witchy type shit, right? And that is the age of Aquarius. It's where the song, like, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. It's where all the, you know, it's supposed to be when we wake up into fifth dimensional energies and rise above our current vibration and stuff. And Aquarius is represented by the man pouring out the jug of water. That's where we're headed, right? Now, if you think back to the Anunnaki and the Mesopotamians and all of the wall art we've covered in past episodes of the Scumbag Diaries, and you think of those big men carrying the water pitchers, right? Those beings are representative of magic. And Damian Eccles has a really great lecture on the water bag and how that represents magic. Now, this is something that I've put together in my own mind. This isn't from any sort of esoteric reading or teacher or anything that I have, but those images of the tall beings with the pitchers of water that they're carrying around, which contains the magical knowledge of the universe, reminds me an awful lot of the personification of Aquarius, which is a tall person pouring a pitcher of water out. And I think what that represents is the universal knowledge that was held throughout all of these fucking ages around the wheel of the zodiac will be poured out onto us. And of course, I'm speaking in metaphors because that's how you have to speak when you talk about magic and stuff, because it's all very metaphysical and shit. But what I mean by that is, like, we're creeping up on the age of Aquarius, right? And just how the golden calf still had a foothold in the beginning of the age of Aries, before the end of the age of Taurus, the energy of Aries started pouring in. So right now, think about it. There's a resurgence in magical thinking. There's a resurgence in neo-paganism, witchcraft, Wicca, Thelema. Like, all of the various magical practices we're talking about today can be traced to this fucking man dumping out the magical waters onto everything. At least that's the way that I think of it. But that's where we are as far as ages go and all of that shit. Now, everything that I've talked about from the point that we started this conversation to now has very little to do with magic overall. It's just a piece of, I've just connected some of the fabrics of religion and theologies, and hopefully you guys can piece a little bit of that together, more than I can articulate, hopefully. But the reason I started with the solar messiahs and the sun gods and the deities representative of the sun is just so I could get to this one little piece of a connecting factor to a magical practice, and that is Kabbalah. All of the solar deities that I talked about can be represented by Tiferet, the circle on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life that represents the sun. It's on the middle pillar of the Tree of Life. And now all of the information that I have spewed to you about various ages, the zodiac, the solar messiahs, and all that shit is literally something that fits into one pillar and one point on the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And there's lots of them. So that's just the reason I've gotten from there to here, and part of the reason that I explained the plot of WandaVision before I even started this story is to show you how convoluted all of this shit is and all of the connections of the information is occulted. The information itself isn't necessarily occulted, but the threads that tie all of the information together are occulted. And so far we've only covered one facet of one point of one pillar on the Tree of Life. And when I say one facet, I mean I probably got into like fucking 0.1% of the information associated with Tiferet on the Tree of Life. And we might talk a little bit about Kabbalah later. I'm not really sure, but in short, Kabbalah is an ancient Jewish mysticism. It's some of the shit they taught in the mystery schools. It's magic, astrology, all that shit is bound up to it. It's basically the story of the universe. It's the thing that Alan Moore based his Promethea books off of, which in Promethea, he wrote each book. He wrote one chapter per point on the Tree of Life, and then he wrote another book with a chapter in that book representative of all the points of Tree of Life, and he wrote it as a Kabbalistic magic spell. And the thing about Kabbalistic magic is you have to get everything in order. It's much like hermetic magic and shit. Like, you have to get every single facet of the magical working to a T, what you need, when you need, for it to actually take effect. But the whole reason that Alan Moore wrote this book was to try to bring about the apocalypse. The point of the book, we talked about this in the very first episode of Scumbag Diaries, and we're just tying it back to that, because apparently moving forward, we're just talking comics and magic, and that's just the flavor of the Scumbag Diaries, so I hope you guys enjoy it. But Alan Moore is a hermetic neo-Gnostic magician, and he wrote a series called Promethea, in which a woman named Promethea is tasked with bringing about the apocalypse. And while that sounds daunting in your mind because of what we are led to associate the apocalypse with through this Piscean age of misinformation and murky waters and hiding things, as we associate that with the end of everything, you know, the end of the world. But what it actually is representative of is the end of an era or an eon or an age. So basically that crossing point between the age of Pisces and the age of Aquarius. But the way that Alan Moore represents this in Promethea is when the apocalypse happens, everyone realizes that the dreamscape or the creative space or the extra dimensional area where thought and memory and the Akashic records and everything and creativity exists is just as much as real and as a part of this plane of existence, the physical, where we exist day to day. And the people start to perceive both those things together, and it's really cool. And that's sort of what I hope the apocalypse. I don't really know. We're going to talk about a lot of magical thinking, and one of the things you guys need to understand is that I'm constantly changing the way that I think about the universe and the way I interpret things. And you're probably going to do the same thing when you start out on a journey of learning magic or the occult. If you start in one practice and follow it all the way through the end, you're going to learn some enlightening shit. Myself, however, I am a jack of all trades and a master of none. And a lot of people might be like, why the fuck are you listening? Why are we listening to you? And the thing is, the full saying goes, a jack of all trades and a master of none is oftentimes better than a master of one. And the reason I'm sharing all the tidbits of information I have about magical practices and theology and stuff with you guys is so maybe if you're listening to this and you catch a thread that connects a thing to another thing, or you get interested in a certain topic that I'm talking about, you'll go and research that, and maybe you can develop your own practice. Or maybe you just get a kick out of listening to crazy people talk about crazy shit. And that's all right too, because I don't know if any of this shit I'm talking about is real or has any merit, but I'd like to think it does. It's more fun to look at life that way. And also, I don't want you guys to think that because I'm referring to Jesus as the solar messiah and all these other deities, the solar messiahs and emissaries of like ancient knowledge and shit, that I don't think they actually existed in real life. I think it's possible that there were physical incarnations of these energies and this information sent throughout each age, whether that was from some godhead, the demiurge of Gnostic teachings, or the biblical Yahweh, whoever sent them. You know, I think that it's more fun to think of things that way. Like, and I always say that Jesus was a magician, right? Like, because he did magic. He did miracles and stuff, and he did rituals, and Christianity's built off rituals and shit, but a lot of art, like especially depictions of the raising of Lazarus, actually show Jesus using a wand to perform these miracles. And that's just at least my interpretation of it. I'm not saying anyone else's is more or less valid, but that's just where I stand. But this episode, we're just talking about magic in broad terms, and you know, we're not really following any structured list or anything. But so far, what have we talked about? We've talked about stars, right? We've talked about astrology and Kabbalah and stuff like that. But star magic is something that is the center of H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhuverse. H.P. Lovecraft is a horror writer who wrote a series of books about some Eldritch horror gods, and pretty much all of them have tentacles, Dagon, the fucking mermaid god and shit like that. And basically what Lovecraft did is he just wrote about the things that scared him the most, which happened to be tentacles and shit like that. But the Necronomicon is the grimoire at the center of this Cthulhuverse in H.P. Lovecraft's writings. And in the series of stories told by H.P. Lovecraft, this grimoire is a book of star magic that is written by a man named the Mad Arab. That's all that we know him as in the teachings of Lovecraft. Alan Moore actually did a graphic novelization about Lovecraft and the Necronomicon and that universe that everyone should go check out because he likes him. But Lovecraft, of course, notorious racist. He had a cat that was named the N-word. He hated black people. He actually has a poem that he wrote called The Creation of... I would say the name for educational purposes and stuff, but this is a podcast and I'm not trying to get canceled, so I'm just not going to say it. But The Creation of N-Words, and he is a vile, disgusting human being, but he wrote good horror. Now, the thing about the Necronomicon, the book in his works, is completely fictitious. The Mad Arab never existed. But even though Lovecraft was a skeptic, he didn't believe in magic at all or anything, and he'd never particularly studied magic or read any grimoires or anything like that, he wrote rituals and about rituals and the sequence and how to do them and stuff in the Necronomicon that are exact mirrors of an actual star magic grimoire written by an Arab man called the Picatrix. You could almost lay the Necronomicon over the Picatrix, and they're the same book. Now, the Necronomicon that most people have circulating in the real world is actually known in esoteric circles as the Simonomicron, because it says it's just written by Simon. And it's basically another copy of the Picatrix and that type of star magic and stuff. Another interesting thing about H.P. Lovecraft is that his wife actually used to be one of Aleister Crowley's Whores of Babylon. Like, she used to get dicked down by the master magician head of Thelema himself, Aleister Crowley. And ironically enough, there are a lot of instances in Lovecraft's work where a character who is a magician will be somewhere at a certain point in time performing a ritual, and it just so happened that at that point in time in the real world, Aleister Crowley was at that particular place performing those miracles. And Lovecraft, there's actually a television show on HBO Max now called Lovecraft Country, which is based off a novel that came out a few years earlier. And now, H.P. Lovecraft, all of his works are technically in the public domain. So anyone, meaning you or me, could go out and write, produce, direct. We could make a movie or a radio play or anything just in the Cthulhuverse. We could use any of the characters, plot devices, whatever the fuck you want to, for profit. And we basically all own the intellectual property of Cthulhu and the Cthulhuverse. That's why there's so many adaptations. So that's where this book sprang up from. But in an attempt to oust Lovecraft for his racist views and ideology, the center of this book was around a black family who happened to be a direct bloodline descendant of this racist Grand Magus. And they fought all of Lovecraft monsters and shit. It basically takes Lovecraft's racism, puts it on a stick, and like holds it up for everyone to see with the backdrop of all of Lovecraftian's monsters. It's actually really great. There's another movie that came out of the Fox Disney merger called Underwater, starring the chick from Twilight, and that is actually a Cthulhu movie technically, even though at the very end of the movie Cthulhu appears as this giant monster floating outside of the underwater laboratory where everything takes place. But that's just, like, they took an idea from the Cthulhuverse and Lovecraft's writings and just used it as the payoff of an otherwise pretty good sci-fi movie with, like, sea monsters attacking and shit. They just threw Cthulhu in there. But all of that is based off actual star magic shit. In fact, Crowley worked with a deity called T'Thulhu, and while Lovecraft married one of Crowley's exes, essentially, scholars believe that they've never really met each other and that he wasn't familiar with Crowley's works, but it's hard to say one way or another because, like H.P. Lovecraft, Aleister Crowley himself influenced pop culture to such a degree, and we're going to get more into that this episode too. Like, this isn't just going to be me explaining why astrology is fucking real potent information or ancient esoteric shit. We're also going to talk about, like, the people who also believed that shit and how they affected society today. Like, they used ancient esoteric knowledge to sort of, like, unwittingly in some cases mold the way that society would go forward, and as society went forward with all that knowledge, they buried it deeper and deeper. And hopefully that's what this episode will bring to light. If it does, it might just be me stoned for an hour and a half talking about random shit, and hopefully you guys bear with me till the end and find some nuggets of at least entertainment amid this fucking chaotic, pandemic-ridden fucking world. Like, you know, the least we could do is be there for one another, and I'm here to regale you with tales of magic and misery. But also, I'd like to take this time about halfway through to share a song with you guys by a friend of mine named Michael Hayes, and he is a hip-hop artist based out of Florida. He's incredibly talented. He's worked really hard to get to the level of talent that he is at, and his songs are amazing. This song he sent me, he gave me permission to play in the song, or he gave me permission to play this song in the episode of The Scumbag Diaries for you guys, and I hope you like it. Go check him out on SoundCloud and shit. I will put all his info in the link to this episode. Go check him out. Give him a shout out. Like, let him know what you think of his music. It's really bomb. I hope you guys enjoy the song. I'll pick back up the conversation about magic, and we'll just go on in with Crowley and his influence on society after this. But listen to his shit, man. He's really talented. The song is called Last Day on Earth by Michael Hayes. Give it a listen, man. I think y'all are going to dig it.
Michael Hayes. I started crying writing this song. Yeah. Honestly, I'm filling up with pain. Misery, it burns a hole deep inside my brain. I'm having dreams of people that I never met, and then it blows my mind when I see them at the store. When that happens, it just makes me feel I'm in for more. Brain is like a hurricane, like a storm. Prophetic, knowing things I shouldn't know. My mind is like the ocean when them nukes used to explode. It's hard to love yourself when your heart is frozen cold. I wish that I could help you, I can't even help myself. Staring at the sun, I'm all alone inside the smell. Am I happy or depressed? Honestly, I can't tell. My emotions and reality are always in a battle. Anxiety and fear is something we don't really have to deal with, but we do because it follows like a shadow. Reflection of our childhood shows up in our pictures. The pain it made us, all that hurt turned us to victims. Used to be a peaceful man, but then peace got evicted. Yeah, it got evicted. Yeah. One sip of the alcohol and then I met addiction. Father was an alcoholic, needles with that coke and smoke. Put that coke inside of a syringe and then he poked the hole. Dirty needle, didn't know, infection almost took his soul. Thank you Jesus Christ for saving him, he almost had to go. This could be our last day on this earth, we will never know. Dirty needle, didn't know, infection almost took his soul. Thank you Jesus Christ for saving him, he almost had to go. This could be our last day on this earth, we will never know. Yeah, we will never know. Yeah, we will never know. Hey man, sometimes you just gotta go out alone. 5 a.m., 6 a.m., watch that sunrise. And let it remind you how beautiful life really is. And that if you just go to sleep and wake up the next day, everything will be better.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed that song. I know I did. And You know, my boy literally laid a piece of his soul down on the beat there for you, and I admire that. It brought up some emotions. He let himself be exposed there to the world, and that's really cool. That last verse was fucking insane, man. Kudos. Guys, I'm going to link his SoundCloud and shit in the episode description. Go check him out and support him. I appreciate it. I've known him since either early high school or middle school, I want to say. And he's come a long way in his life's journey. And that doesn't just reflect in his music, you know. When I think back to, like, the interactions and stuff I had with him in high school and compare them to now, like, he's come a long way and he's put in a lot of work. He's a fucking badass person. And, like, we debate with each other a little bit about, like, religion and magic and stuff like that. And we have pretty differing views on things. But regardless of what outlandish shit I might say while I'm talking to him, unlike most people who disagree with the way that I look at the world, instead of, like, belittling me or calling me stupid or anything like that, he tries to see where I'm coming from and look. He tries to look through the lens that I'm seeing, man, and I appreciate that a great deal. And I'm going to share some more of his music in later episodes, man. Go support him. I know eventually he's going to blow up one day. I appreciate all you guys taking the time out of me rambling on to listen to my homeboy's music. We will get back into the episode right now. So, I'm not going to lie, a lot of time has gone past since I recorded the half of this episode before I actually played this song. But I'm pretty sure the very last thing that I said was that we were going to talk about Crowley and his influence in pop culture and society. And it's really, really broad. Like, of course, there's Mr. Crowley, the song by Ozzy Osbourne. There is the demon Crowley from Supernatural, right? That's a clear, direct fucking inference over it. Crowley even became the king of hell, okay? There is, he created his own religion called Thelema, right? Which is Latin for will, I believe. I've heard people say it's Latin for love, and right now I can't actually give a definitive answer because I don't take notes, because I'm a dumbass. I should start doing that. But there are plenty of famous Thelemites, that's what the people of his religion are called, including none other than Ziggy Stardust himself, David Bowie. The Beatles were into Thelema. In fact, if you go look at the cover of Sgt. Pepper, if you look up and to the left of the sea of inspiration there, you'll see Aleister Crowley's face. Robert Anton Wilson, his name is widely regarded in the magical fucking lexicon, I guess. He's the guy who proposed the idea of reality tunnels, runnels, if you will. And Timothy Leary is also a Thelemite. His turn on, tune in, drop out motto certainly took some inspiration from the countercultural movements and boundary pushing pioneered by Crowley. Jack Parsons, founder of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, who was friends with L. Ron Hubbard, and they did the Babylon working in the desert before Hubbard ended up stealing all of Parsons' money and his wife. And Led Zeppelin's Jimmy Page was a Thelemite. In fact, Crowley owned a house on Loch Ness in Scotland, and he had tried to do a ritual there. But like with most things in Crowley's life, he didn't actually follow through with it. He only did, like, 6 months worth of the ritual as opposed to the entire 18 months, I believe. And then he left. And right after the time that Crowley was there working his ritual, and when he left, is when the first sightings of the Loch Ness Monster started showing up. So people like to say that Crowley didn't close this fucking portal, and the Loch Ness Monster came through. Just like later on down the line, when Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard meet up in the desert and try to do the Babylon working to bring about a Whore of Babylon, which they would later believe to be Jack Parsons' wife. But when they did that ritual, Crowley was pissed off, and he said they didn't ask his permission, and also that they didn't close the portal. And coincidentally, like the timing of the Loch Ness Monster being seen, after Crowley didn't close his portal, around the time that these two did the Babylon working in the desert is when the UFO sighting boom happened back in the day. Like, it predates Roswell by a little while, and like, it's, they're saying that just like Crowley summoned the Loch Ness Monster, these assholes summoned extra dimensional beings, demons, aliens. But we discuss shit like that on the show all the time. And in fact, I'm pretty sure I've told these stories before. But one of the main influences on modern day society of Crowley is that L. Ron Hubbard basically just stole Crowley's idea for Scientology. He basically stole Crowley's shit in starting Scientology and was way more successful and ultimately made way more money off of the system. In fact, Thelema and Scientology line up as far as like the rituals and things go. And I think it's funny that part of the Scientology belief system is that tiny little extra-dimensional aliens or demons called Thetans come into your body and you have to like pay money to rid yourself of them. But that's just one of it. But anyway, I totally missed the point. The fucking house in Loch Ness where Crowley did the working and summoned the Loch Ness monster, Jimmy Page bought it. In fact, Motley Crue's drum kits and shit, like the cases they took on tour, had his Thelemic symbol on them. And you know, and not only was he one of the main influences on Scientology, but the next cat we're going to talk about, he probably would have never been shit if it wasn't for Crowley's influence either, and that is Anton LaVey of the Church of Satan. He was greatly influenced by Crowley when forming the Church of Satan. And Anton LaVey, coincidentally, is when I had... I've been studying, I guess, New Age stuff is the really broad term that I'll use to put where my headspace was at this time. I was into some New Agey shit. I was, like, I guess on the borderline of magic, but I wouldn't quite call it that. I had learned Reiki and energy healing at this point, and I was just sort of experimenting with the way reality worked. And I stumbled into LaVey and Satanism. And it interested me because it was like a mirror to Christianity, which, and I stated in the last episode, is where my spiritual journey began. I came out of Christianity. And I would flip-flop between Florida and Kentucky, so I was going to very differing sects of Christian churches as I was growing up. But I should mention, by the way, before everyone starts thinking that I worship the devil and shit, that I don't necessarily identify with LaVey and Satanism anymore. I'm sort of in my own spiritual shed, so to speak. But LaVey and Satanists don't actually believe in a Satan. In fact, the religion is atheistic in nature. They do practice magic, but the way that they, or the way Anton LaVey talks about magic and views magic is that the ritual is actually just a series of steps in a psychodrama that you use to communicate what you want to achieve to your subconscious, which then plugs into the matrix of the collective unconscious of Carl Jung or the aether, whatever the fuck you want to call it, depending on the discipline you're looking at it through. And when that happens, you enact whatever you're wanting to happen anyway. So it's sort of like people who use affirmations every day or mantras, shit like that. It's just, instead of trying to rewire the matrix, rewire yourself. It's where that line comes in where the kid says, "I cannot bend the spoon. That would be impossible. There is no spoon. Instead, you have to understand that there is no spoon." I just butchered that line from the Matrix, but it's like that. So when I thought about it like that, I was like, oh, okay. So it's really more about, it's not about necessarily affecting reality. It's about affecting your perception of reality. And based on your perception of reality, that's the part of the algorithm of yourself that, like, fucking affects how you feel, the way you react to things. So that's how I sort of dove into magic. And now I still agree that the psychodrama and the speaking to your subconscious via symbols and rituals and patterns and shit like that is the way to go, but I also feel like it affects reality a little bit more than Anton LaVey would be letting on. And also, I feel like if Aleister Crowley met Anton LaVey, he would probably hate him. I don't think they would get along. at all, which would probably make LaVey sad, but Anton LaVey legitimately started out as a fucking carnival worker, and then he used his carny skills to start a fucking religion and get rich off of it. Interesting side note, there's a conspiracy theory that Zena Shrek LaVey, which is Anton LaVey's daughter, was cloned, and that clone is none other than Taylor Swift. So there's that. Some famous LaVey and Satanists include Jane Mansfield, Sammy Davis Jr., Kenneth Agner. Marilyn Manson, Richard Ramirez, Liberace, and Dave Navarro, the host of Fuck, Ink Master. I'm getting kind of tired, in case you guys can't tell. Dave Navarro has the LaVey and Satanist cross tattooed on his chest, and he has, like, pretty shitty tattoos. I mean, not shitty tattoos. I don't know. I don't know why he's a judge on Ink Master, but I know that he's down with the devil, so to speak. Pop, music, rap, metal, hip-hop, all music has been affected by magic in some way, whether that was Crowley, Thelema, John Dee, the fucking, like, movies and shit. 007 is literally the great court wizard John Dee's fucking code name. A bunch of stories from James Bond were actually supposedly spy stories from Crowley, because Crowley was also a spy during World War II. Magic has influenced everything, man, especially comic books. Like, Crowley, for instance, was the basis for him and his mentor having a falling out when they both got kicked out of the Order of the Golden Dawn, is the basis for the very beginning of the Alan Moore story. Fuck, I just confused two magic-ass comic book writers. The beginning of Neil Gaiman's Preludes and Nocturnes, the Sandman story. Those two characters in the beginning having magic war with one another, that's actually Crowley and his mentor, who he robbed robes from and shit. John Dee is also the name of Dr. Destiny in the Sandman series, and not just Sandman, but in DC overall. In fact, John Dee was in the Crisis prelude crossover on the Arrowverse called Elseworlds. So that's just another way magic is permeated into it. Alan Moore created John Constantine, and he's not based on any magician in particular, he's just a working blue-collar magician, but because of the way Alan Moore writes his shit as a spell, anyone who has ever written John Constantine has a story of running into him in real life. Alan Moore's particular story is that one night he was in a pub, and a surly-looking man in a fucking trench coat, blonde hair, cigarette in his fucking mouth, walked by and just kind of winked at him and then walked out the back door. And Alan said that he knew John Constantine way too well to feel comfortable getting up and following him out that door. And other various writers, such as Garth Ennis and pretty much everyone who's ever picked up a pen to write a Constantine story, has told a tale of running into them in real life. And I think that just goes to show how much affecting your subconscious and communicating with your subconscious mind via symbols, rituals, and shit like that is potent, that it could achieve an effect on not just the original creator of the character, but everyone to use him thereafter. Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman are very, very close friends. Neil Gaiman's belief in magic and cosmology type shit isn't as widely well known. Like, I don't know if Neil Gaiman is like a practicing occultist or wizard or anything. He may be an armchair occultist, but he knows some shit, and he's very good friends with Alan Moore, who everyone knows is balls deep in fucking grimoires when he's not writing fucking rape stories about fairy tale characters. I can't very well talk about how magic has permeated through culture without talking about Harry Potter. That's probably, like, every little kid who went to church was told that Harry Potter was fucking witchcraft and shit, and that they couldn't go watch it. But what confused me about it is, because I was reading the books at the same time I was going to that RA group I talked about, and I didn't understand why a book where snakes could talk to people and people could, like, turn fucking one liquid to another was blasphemous when it's literally the same shit that Jesus did in the Bible. Like, at a young age, I was like, Jesus is just doing magic, and you guys aren't calling it that, and that's weird. But also, I was raised by comic books and TVs and shit, and because of my reading comic books, I was introduced to the idea of the multiverse and quantum physics and fucking the quantum realm and shit way too early, and those ideas were just percolating in my little noggin as I disassociated into my own universes and just tried to, I guess escapism is really what drove me to have the views that I do today, and maybe that's a symptom of not being able to necessarily tell fiction from reality, but as I've stated many times on the podcast, I don't think that the two things are mutually exclusive to their own lane. I think that they intertwine and intersect and affect one another in a way that none of us can properly understand, nor ever will we. But I'm getting a little off topic here, and I'm probably towards the end of the episode because I'm starting to get a little tired and trail off more than usual, but the bottom line is, magic and magical thinking has literally been influencing culture since pre-ancient Egyptian times, and we're coming back around to that age of Aquarius where the magical waters are going to flow if you subscribe to that theory, or if you subscribe to Christian ideology and the apocalypse, that's going to line up around the same time as the age of Aquarius, and one could argue that the apocalypse is just an epoch lapse and not necessarily the end of forever. In fact, I think that I don't know the quote necessarily, but someone in the Bible asked Jesus how long he would be with them, and he said, "I would be with you until the end of this age," which people seem to tend to take as the end of existence, but it doesn't really say that's what's going to happen in Revelation, as far as I know. There's also some, like, I was going to get into how the Bible refers to Jesus as Lucifer at one point, and the Aramaic and the Greek translations of the Bible, and how there were some indiscrepancies in that, but I'll just save that for another episode. And I'm not trying to, like, bash Christianity or diss anyone who believes in that stuff. I like to put these ideas out there and have people think about them. And I'm open to anyone else's views and ideology, and anyone's welcome to come onto the podcast and discuss those if they'd like. But, you know, that's pretty much, I guess, where I'm gonna call the episode. At least for magic, we might talk about some comic book shit for a little bit while longer. My next episode is actually, I already have it planned. In fact, I've recorded a portion of it in between recording this episode, because there you go, I'm gonna drop a little podcast secret on you guys. I recorded two episodes at the same time. The magic of microphones. So I'm going to do an episode on X-Men. That will be the next episode that I put out, and then I'll probably do another comic-themed episode, might throw a true crime episode at you, but eventually we will come back around to magic, and when we do, we'll start talking, like I had planned on talking about witchcraft, Wicca, folk medicine, all that kind of shit in this episode, but I don't want to make a fucking 2-hour episode of me talking about bits and pieces of all this shit. I would rather dedicate an hour in the future to each of those practices and ideologies. So I hope that there was enough tidbits of information in this episode to at least get you guys interested in some of the shit coming up. If you hated this episode, I apologize, but hopefully you guys, there's a little chunk in here for everyone. But yeah, I'm excited about the way things are going in the comic book world, or at least in the comic book movie world. We have the Snyder Cut coming out soon, which I'm kind of nervous about, because Zack Snyder has posted pictures of Jared Leto's Joker in the Snyder Cut, and he's dressed as Jesus, which isn't really concerning, because I don't think the Joker would ever dress like Jesus. In fact, he's the exact type of person in the comic book world to be as blasphemous as possible. But Jared Leto literally has a cult. Like, he calls it a cult, and they call themselves the Echelon, and they think that Jared Leto is Jesus. They think he is the second coming of the Messiah. And so to put Jared Leto's cult leader ass in this movie as Jesus, that's just adding fuel to the fire. But not to mention all the backlash that Snyder got in Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman because of all the Jesus symbolism. People are starting to wonder about you, bud. You made a really good movie when you made The Watchmen. I'm not going to lie, that was a solid flick. We should have been nervous when we realized you left the giant squid out, but you pulled it off. What can I say? killing, having Batman kill people, we looked over it. We got past it, Zack Snyder. We accepted it. We know that he basically killed KG Beast in the comics. We know that. We know that he left him in a fucking sealed room and welded the door shut so that KG Beast couldn't get out. And we know that he didn't have any food or water. And the writers of the comic book has confirmed KG Beast died in that room. So by some sort of passive-aggressive proxy, at least, Batman has killed someone. Not to mention the fact that he's used guns in the past, and there are other stories from the earlier days of Batman up to now where he has killed people, Elseworld or otherwise, main canon. So we got past that. We really did. We blamed Joss Whedon when Justice League was shitty because he was mostly responsible. But they gave you $70 million to go back and remake the Justice League. The studio did that because hundreds of thousands of fans bullied them into doing that the same way we bullied Taco Bell into getting potatoes back. We got you that $70 million to make the movie that we wanted to see, not to make the movie that you wanted to make. And I think you should think about that. I know you're not going to hear my podcast, so I'm just trying to magically send this to your subconscious so that if you did fuck it up, maybe something in your fucking brain will click and you'll realize it. This man wanted to make Martha Wayne and Martha Kent the same woman. She wanted Superman's adoptive mother to be the biological mother of Batman. And not in the way that, like, would have been cool. She wanted her to, like, fake her death and move to Kansas and marry Jonathan Kent, assume a new identity, and then raise Superman, all the while knowing she had a son in Gotham, and probably realizing when that son in Gotham started to get, like, if Martha Wayne was alive and Bruce started running around as fucking Batman, she's gonna realize it. And they have the news in Kansas. They know Batman exists. I don't give a fuck, all right? But I digress. If you fuck up this movie, Zack Snyder, I can't actually do anything to you physically, but I'll make a voodoo doll, bro. I'll make a voodoo doll and I'll poke you in the penis with a fucking thumbtack. Please don't fuck it up. I hope you introduce the things that you want to and that you can play with it. And like it's the Snyder cut, not the fan cut. I get that, but if after all this backlash and all these people rallying for you, you drop the ball, then you, sir, are a cunt. You're a cunt. With that being said, everyone at Marvel, you guys continue doing a great job. WandaVision is fantastic. I love it. I'm really excited to see what happens in these last two episodes. Falcon and the Winter Soldier looks like a fucking gem of a TV series, and I can't wait until later in March when that comes out. Loki also looks like it's going to be a solid series. I'm excited about that. It looks like it's going to be a little more funny than the other two. Not that WandaVision wasn't funny, but it looks like the tone's going to be a little different, but it looks good nonetheless. I'm not worried about anything Marvel's going to make. You could tell me Marvel was making a movie that I would get nervous about. Even Captain fucking Marvel wasn't that bad of a flick. And now, because of what's happening in WandaVision, Captain Marvel's an even better movie, in my opinion. So Zack Snyder, don't fuck up. Don't fuck up. In one of the very early episodes of this podcast, I was with the people rallying for the Snyder Cut to be made. I was with them. I championed for you on this very show, on the airwaves, sir. I realize, fans of the show, that the tone changed drastically, but I want Zack Snyder to understand that if he fucks this movie up, I'm sticking a fucking thumbtack in his dick. That's all I gotta say. Also, while I'm threatening filmmakers on my show, Guy Ritchie, you've made some fantastic films. You really have. You made some great films. The live-action adaptation of Aladdin, I watched it, and I didn't know that you made that film going into it, but within the first, like, 30 fucking seconds of watching Aladdin, I was like, this feels like a Guy Ritchie film. I'm digging it. Then I find out, guess what? Guy Ritchie made Aladdin. Good movie. Snatch, good movie. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, badass fucking movie. Both of the Sherlock Holmes movies, fucking mint, okay? The Gentleman, mwah. Fantastic film. You, Matthew McConaughey, and Charlie Hunnam, you fucking rock my socks off. Now, my favorite movie that Guy Ritchie's ever made, that you, Guy Ritchie, because I'm going to assume you will hear this. I don't think Zack Snyder's going to hear this. I don't. But I have the utmost certainty that Guy Ritchie will hear this, at least this segment of my podcast. I fucking know it. You made a movie called Rock'n'Rolla, okay? Me and my friends used to watch it all the time when we would hang out. We would pretend that we were Archie, okay? We would pretend we were Uncle Archie. We would pretend we were all the other characters in the movie. Gerard Butler, fucking star-studded cast. Ludacris was in it. This was during a time when Ludacris had only been in, like, one or two movies. You gave him a role with the lines and showed that this motherfucker could act, okay? The guy who played the fucking junkie in the movie later went on to play Dr. fucking Doom. I get it. You're busy making movies. You got contracts and shit. But when I finished watching Rock'n'Rolla, you made a promise to me that Archie and the fucking bunch would be back in the movie The Real Rock'n'Rolla. Well, guess what? I was fucking 16 years old when Rock'n'Rolla came out, and now I am almost 30. Where's the film, Guy Ritchie? Where's the film? So anyway, guys, if you enjoy the show, or even are mildly entertained by the show, I would greatly appreciate it if you want to support us by sharing the show to your friends, getting them to listen, getting them to peek into the mind of a fucking manic depressive wizard, and you know, just share some shit. That's all I need. I don't need any money. Don't send me any money. Don't do anything like that. But what you can do is, when my friend's clothing line comes up and running, you can go spend money with him, or you can support some of the local artists, not local for me, but local to where they are, artists that I share on the podcast moving forward. You can support my friends and all of their businesses and stuff going forward. But for me, I just need you to share the podcast for sponsor reasons, obviously, but also I want Guy Ritchie to know that I'm still fucking waiting on The Real Rock'n'Rolla. And with that, my friends, I leave you. Everyone love everyone. And in the words of the immortal Bill Hicks, it's just a ride. Have a good night, guys.